I was confused by Miss America, but I think I've got it mostly straightened out at this point.
Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Battle Hymn of the Republic by Anita Bryant, a 1973 release on Word Records, catalog number WST8571.
So this album comes, of course, from Everyday Music in Portland, Oregon, and that is for two reasons. One, because it seems like about half the records that we've been featuring on the show come from there, and two, because I got this one for 50 cents or something, so that's likely the place. But actually, since about this time last year, I had been looking for some, you know, patriotic or 4th of July-esque album to feature on our podcast, and it took me, I don't know, several months to find anything at all. And
there was a huge rush on patriotic albums last year.
Exactly. So it took me several months to find one, and I found this in a John Philip Sousa album, but I guess ultimately this is what we picked. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what the album looks like, Flissy?
So this is, in fact, an exceedingly patriotic-looking cover. It's got Anita Bryant on profile, kind of gazing upward towards the corner of the album, and it has superimposed a American flag. So nice, big, bold, patriotic cover. And then on the back in big black letters, it says Anita Bryant, Battle Hymn of the Republic in all caps. And then it just very simply has the track listing. And this album is produced by Bob Green, who was her husband at the time, and the music direction by Chuck Bird.
All right. Well, should we get right to our first clip?
Yeah. What's our first pick?
So my pick is the first track on side A. It is the song When Johnny Comes Marching Home. So let's take a listen.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah, we'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. The old church bell will peal with joy, hoorah, hoorah, to welcome home our darling boy, hoorah. They will strew the way and we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home.
All right, Flissy, so what do you think?
Well, this is, in fact, a very patriotic-sounding song. It's got all of the very American affects of trumpets and snare drums and this marching rhythm. And it has also, like, I think her singing is kind of like affected and phony sounding, honestly. It's a little overly puritanical, which maybe is in fact like a very early American sentiments, maybe not out of, maybe not inappropriate in this case. Like, especially these like, hoorah, like very like, I don't know, rousing spoken word hoorahs in there. And my favorite part about this song is that it's short.
So I have a lot of sort of mixed feelings about this song and this album in general. I mean, it's weird. I get this sort of sense of nostalgia because it's really like the last time that I really sung or listened to these songs was when I was in middle school. And
yeah, I think so.
We were taught all these songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it sort of has that feeling like this song and Battle Hymn of the Republic have that sound that's like something you would hear at your local park band shell on the 4th of July. So it sounds like, you know, I guess something of the genre. But at the same time, I don't know what it is about patriotic American songs that they all seem to be like from the, you know, mid-1800s. And I guess, you know, like this and Battle Hymn of the Republic are sort of both sort of focused around the Civil War, which I just kind of, I don't know, it doesn't really get me inspired or, you know, feeling patriotic. I just kind of get sad. So
yeah, I was like, oh, yes, thoughts about a dark time in our nation's history.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's got all of the trappings of a patriotic song, but ultimately I can't really get excited about it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of like American patriotism is tied up in war, though, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like the Star Spangled Banner being about like the War of 1812 or whatever.
Too. I think like, you know, during World War II was like a big time for American patriotism as well, with like war bonds and like rations and all that stuff. There was like so much propaganda around all that stuff.
Yeah. But I find this album a little interesting. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about it now since we're talking about this track, but yeah, it's interesting. Like the first half of this album is really like this whole first side is like something that I would have sung in middle school. It is like all your patriotic classics. You know, this song is When Johnny Comes Marching Home. And then the next is America the Beautiful and This Is My Country. And after that is America, also known as My Country Tis of Thee. And then God Bless America and Battle Hymn of the Republic. So I don't know, a lot of classic picks there. And all, America is sort of sung in this like folksy style, but a lot of them have the sort of orchestral sound to them, I think, which is a little bit different than the second side. And I guess we'll get to talking about that a little bit more when we get to your pick. So what can you tell us about Anita Bryant, Flissy?
So Anita Bryant was born March 25th in 1940 in Barnsdall, Oklahoma. And notably, she was Miss Oklahoma in 1958 and was the second runner-up in the Miss America Beauty Pageant that year.
Does that mean that she came in third?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
I always was confused by that. Because like, there's like the queen, and then there's first runner-up, and then second runner-up. And
it's like horse racing where you have like to place and to show. And
yeah.
It's like, which one is second? I don't know.
Yeah.
Why can't you just say first, second, and
third? I don't know. And like, my grandmother was super into the Miss America beauty pageants. Like, we would watch it together every year. And she would sing the Miss America like theme song to me when I would walk around the house. And like, I remember watching the Miss America pageants with her. And I'm like, wait, like, you know, they announce with much drama at the end, like who is the runners up. And I'm like, oh, yay. And then like at the end, it's like between the runner up and the queen or whatever. And I would always get confused by like who was the actual winner when I was little. I'm like, oh, that girl won. And then it was like, no, like she's sad because she didn't win. I'm like, oh, anyway. Yeah. I was confused by Miss America, but I think I've got it mostly straightened out at this point. So anyway, that was kind of her angle into the entertainment business. So she did some acting and some bit parts and things. And she also was a singer. Obviously, she has maybe like a dozen, 20 or so records under her belt and had 11 songs on the U.S. Hot 100. She did have some like up in the top 10, but mostly they were like kind of lower, lesser ranking Billboard hits. And she was also, due to her like wholesome Miss America status, she was the spokesperson for the Florida Orange Juice Commission from 1969 to 1979. So all that is, you know, pretty standard history. Things get a little sticky when in 1977, Dade County in Florida passed an ordinance prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation. So if you remember your civil rights history, around the late 1960s, there is obviously like this big time of activation of civil rights, beginning with the Stonewall riots in 1969. There was this big push for gay rights in particular. And so like over the course of the 1970s, many counties and states were passing laws, pretty standard ones that we're now used to, about how you can't discriminate in, hiring people, you can't fire people based on their sexual orientation. And so in 1977, Dade County passed an ordinance prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation. And shortly after that, Anita Bryant took it upon herself to lead a campaign on the behalf of the Save Our Children group, protesting this ordinance and asking for it to be repealed. And so this was like on the basis that of some like fundamentalist Christian beliefs that decided that homosexuality is sinful, and also they had this perceived threat that gay people were going to recruit children and like molest children, which is completely not right. So she led this big push through this Save Our Children group. And in fact, her campaign was successful, and it was the ordinance was repealed, and it in fact sparked other repeals across the country. She took this Save Our Children group and would push for repeals of similar laws in all different cities across the U.S. So, of course, there was a huge pushback, a huge reaction on the behalf of the gay community and on behalf of the people who were working for civil rights. So this led to a boycott of Florida orange juice. Like, she has this like super wholesome, like all-American girl, like sweet, you know, way about her. There's no other way for people to like react about this. Like, there was no way to like, I don't know. There was like, there's no dirt on her really. Like, she has this really wholesome, you know, what do you call that? Like, image. Yeah, she's got like this super wholesome image. And so there's like, there was no way to crack it. I mean, they could of course refute the things that she was saying, but their other mode of reacting to her was boycotting Florida orange juice. It was a huge deal. We were born in 1980, and so we missed this whole boycott of Florida orange juice. Did you miss it?
Did I miss it?
Yeah. I mean, were you aware that this happened?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I wasn't either. But it was like a huge deal. And Anita Bryant, she was satired on Saturday Night Live. And there were all these jokes about orange juice. There were places where you couldn't order orange juice. And they would like renamed the screwdriver an Anita Bryant cocktail instead. And instead of orange juice and vodka, it was apple juice and vodka because they wouldn't serve orange juice in the bars. So it was like a huge big deal. And eventually, like, all this business about the boycott of the Florida orange juice and all of the, like, she continued to speak out against gay rights over the like the entire 10 years that she was the spokesperson of the Florida orange juice. And so eventually she was fired. And she also divorced her husband, Bob Green, who was the producer of this album. He was a DJ based in Miami. So they divorced in 1980. And she blamed gay people for her divorce because gay people decided that they needed to take down her career and ruin her life. And so she blamed gay people for that. And the Christian fundamentalist audiences, which she had like so closely courted and relied on over the past years, shunned her for divorce because she is like living this like dissolution of marriage and, you know. So she did eventually remarry in 1990. During that time, there was this failed Music Mansion project, which was like part performance and part of her preaching about her values. And that didn't really take off. So eventually she filed for bankruptcy in 2001, which includes hundreds of thousands of dollars in unpaid taxes. And now she seems to be living a quiet life in Oklahoma, doing some charity appearances and advocating for her ministries. And like over the years, she's released some albums. There was a 2-hour TV special she appeared in 1980. And she also has a dozen or so books released under her name on behalf of her ministries. Although it seems that all of those are actually ghostwritten by other people.
All right.
some biography, that's for sure.
All right. Well, with that, do we want to get to your pick, Felicity?
Sure. My song is the final selection, a medley of Dixie and Shenandoah. It's the last track on side B.
All right, let's take a listen.
Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton. Are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
So I mentioned a little bit before about the first side, and the first side was really sort of like, you know, all of your patriotic classics. But side two is something that of a bit of confusing to me. So, I mean, it starts off with the Star Spangled Banner, which, you know, is our national anthem and whatever, very patriotic. But I have to say, this is probably the most pedestrian version that I've ever heard of the Star Spangled Banner. And it really sounds like she's just trying to get through it. Like, I don't even know why it's included on the album when it sounds like her heart is really not in it. And I find it interesting that of all the songs on the album, it's the shortest one. It's just like a minute, 40 seconds, just literally like sings all the lyrics and then it's done. And then after that, it gets into these sort of like Christian hymns that I'm not really sure why, what they have to do with patriotism. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe I put my own, you know, perspective. I was looking for a patriotic album. I picked this one up. Maybe that wasn't her intention, but my goodness, you look at the cover and the thing, it's got this American flag and it's called Battle Hymn of the Republic. I mean, it sure sounds like it's trying to be a patriotic album, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There are these hymns and I mean, I guess they're sort of like, you know, pro-country, but a lot of them are written in England. Like there's a song Faith of Our Fathers that was, I guess, had two different versions written, one for Ireland and one for England. Not sure what it has to do with the U.S. Eternal Father Strong to Save, which is like some sort of maritime hymn that, I mean, again, is from the U.K., but I guess it's sometimes used by the Navy. And so, you know, I guess, you know, support of the armed services is patriotic, but I'm just kind of confused by these selections.
Well, I think, like, I mean, isn't it obvious from her biography and her anti-gay activism that, like, part of her deal is that she, her opinion of America is that it is founded on some very, like, strict Christian values?
I was not really sure about the selections on side B. I mean, you know, in a lot of the songs I don't really hear in a specifically patriotic context, like Let There Be Peace on Earth. I mean, it's a fine song. You oftentimes hear it as a Christmas song. So I felt like it was a little bit out of place here. I mean, I guess it wasn't originally written necessarily as a Christmas song, but that might have been the sort of the cultural context of the intervening years speaking. I don't know what it was viewed as at this point. And then we get to the end and we have Dixie and Shenandoah and your pick. And I'm interested why you picked Dixie because, yeah, I mean, Dixie is, well, one, to me, this seemed like a weird rendering of Dixie. Most of the other versions I've heard are much more upbeat and, you know, like a march. This is sort of sounds more like a lamentation at the loss of slavery. I don't know what you what you think about this.
Okay, so I picked this song because, like, one, I had to pick a song, right? I don't like this album, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, when I think about patriotic music, like for me, like what is like American sounding music more than like the marchy snare drummy kind of music is like folk music. Like I grew up listening to a lot of folk music. Maybe that's why. And even though like Dixie has been appropriated by folk musicians, although it's not a folk song. And Shenandoah is, I think, among the best American folk songs.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love Shenandoah.
So I'm like, okay. So I like that this song, this medley has a like more folksy interpretation of patriotism. And also, I think this is representative of like Anita Bryant's sort of normal wheelhouse. Like she, in other recordings and on this TV special that she did, like, medleys were kind of her jam. Like, that was a thing that she did. So I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of an Anita Bryant thing. And I also thought it'd be interesting to, like, talk about Dixie, because as you mentioned, like, this is it's a super racist song. I didn't even really think about how racist it was.
Yes, I guess as a song about an ex-slave basically missing plantation life and wishing he was back on the plantation.
Yeah.
And it was sung by people in blackface who would put on a sort of like a faux, you know, like African accent or something.
Yeah. So this is like part of like blackface minstrels from vaudeville scenes. So this is written like in the 1850s. And then it was later appropriated as a folk song. So I'm like, yeah, that's like super messed up. And like, how did that even get like appropriated to be a folk song? Like, oh, well, we'll just like erase the history of this being like, oh, we used to sing this song in blackface. Obviously, this is not written by a black person, because who would like actually be like, oh, remember the good old days when I was a slave on the plantation? I wish it was like that again. No. Anyway, so that's messed up. And like, I'm further confused, like, why is it in this mashup with Shenandoah, except like, arguably they're both sort of referencing the South, and there are in fact also some,
well, I don't know. I mean, is Shenandoah is like talking about the Missouri River, which I don't think has anything to do with the South at all, does it?
Well, I don't know. The Missouri is a long river. It goes all the way down to, like, down through Arkansas, right?
You're talking about the Mississippi River? Missouri River goes, like, from around, like, St. Louis to western Montana, the Rockies, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's the path that Lewis and Clark went down.
Okay. So not in the South.
Nope.
Okay. Well, I don't know why they're fused together, except that in some lyrics of the song, Oh Shenandoah, that song is also racist, but it's racist about Indians instead of black people. But not in the version that she's singing. In the version she's singing is like, I think is probably the more common version, which is just sort of like in admiration of the river in general.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess that this song was common by people who traveled the Missouri River. And they had basically all kinds of different verses about it, depending on who, you know, was singing it. And I guess sort of the standard lyrics that you hear in renditions of it these days, which you hear on this album, are, you know, pretty much okay. I guess Shenandoah was a Indian chieftain who, I guess this is in celebration of, although I guess in some versions it's about a sailors wanting to marry his daughter. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, a very beautiful song.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't understand really why these two are blended together, but I don't know. It's a medley. It's kind of folksy. It's an Anita Bryant thing.
So overall, what did you think about this album?
I don't like this album at all. And like, as soon as we've listened to it a few times before we like prepared for this this podcast. And every time we listen to it, by the end, I'm like, oh my gosh, thank goodness this thing is over. I'm like, it's the worst. And
I mean, I think if she had left it just like side A is like, and you just didn't have side B.
It should be a 7-inch.
It would be okay. I mean, it would just be like, oh, these are just, you know, classic.
Really in your face, patriotic kind of songs.
Yeah. But it still makes me wonder about like, well, what happened to patriotic music or whatever? You know, like, why is that, you know, the 1850s, like the era of when so-called patriotic music is written, and you know what happened since then? I don't know.
I think that Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Our Land, like that, I think should be our national anthem.
All right, so thumbs up,
thumbs down.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know. I mean,
and then also like reading her biography, and she is like, seems to be like such a nasty woman, and also like so horrible. Like, she had like a long lasting impact on like the reversal of gay white rights, and that is, I just like, oh, that's just awful.
Yeah, so you this album probably not going to stay in our collection, you'd say?
Like, I'm almost like, why even send it back out into the world again? Except that it's only like, it, to me, I'm like, well, at least Anita Bryant is not going to get any money from it, from us having bought it, or perhaps someone else buying it from us. I don't know.
All right. Well, for more, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/56. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at livinginhifi for longer correspondence. Or if you're Anita Bryant and want to rebut our analysis, send an email to feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week we'll get to the album that we were supposed to do last week, but then we were on vacation for, so sorry about the confusion and mix up on that, but you'll get to hear it next week. So stay tuned and thanks for listening.
Happy 4th of July. Thanks. Bye-bye.